We're back, and nobody has an answer. I don't know if the line dropped here. We don't know. But anyway, I'm back. Did Sid get lost too, Case?
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay, great.
Yeah.
My theme there, Sid, to throw to you was just that the evolution, and I always think of Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. Nature finds a way.
And your point about Tricky Creek is really well made, because he comes from a really seriously good family, Battle Creek girl. And so, although I mentioned the top line was very sturdy, it's a big, classy family. It was bred by Glencrest. And, you're right. The mayor comes from a really good line. The sire came from a really good line. They just happen not to be currently, at that level. And she took it to a lovely lady, elevated the whole thing.
When you see, we're focused typically on the first, on the first couple of lines in a pedigree, but when you see Seabird, Northern Dancer, Tom Fool, Turn Two, Nijinsky, Rebo, that's Leslie's ladies. That's all her fourth. That's all in her fourth line, and. Shenanigans and Near Arctic that got ice capade. I mean, there was everything there to believe in. And actually, I'd love to hear from. We'll try to get Fred Mitchell and next week. And I'd love to hear, what he was thinking and I don't know if you saw Tim Gleishaw was working for Bob Holtis when she came to Indiana to run in a stake. And I always think of there's so many mayors like this, Sid, in our current history that are a testimony to having, all kinds of horsemen get opportunities. And we're definitely in an era of super trainer and so forth. However, when you think about a few mares like this, all right, here's Bob Holtis had Leslie's Lady. Del Carroll made Weekend Surprise. There's no AP and D without Weekend Surprise.
Yeah.
There's so many of this storyline. When you look at the prominent families, it speaks to the fact that the horsemanship comes in all shapes and sizes, and making a mare like Leslie's Lady, who, 187,000 and one stake win, five wins and 28 starts, and a modest pedigree, and she'll be an institution in the stud book going forward.
Yeah, no question about it.
Let's turn to another workaday stallion, and Hill and Dale's Midnight Loot. 15,000, Sid, and here's an exciting potential horse, particularly in the hands of Keith DeSormo, who absolutely was very frank about Call Me Midnight's performance, and he almost made it sound like he thought the Call Me Midnight should have won more handily and with more authority after the setup he got, but Call Me Midnight, and a new stake winner for Midnight Loot.
Yeah, and I did want to talk about this pedigree a bit, because Midnight Loot, we've said over and over again what a great value he is. you know, he's a champion sprinter, he just gets, you know, a steady stream of really good winners, stakes horses, and then he gets thrown into this, a horse like Midnight Bizou, a champion, or, you know, any number of others, shaking it up, won the Malibu G1. What's interesting about this particular mating, because I read a article about it, the farm that has it,
Hartwell.
Hartwell Farm. The guy at the farm said, okay, here, this really would tie into Leslie's Lady in a way, too. He bought this mare unraced for $16,000. She was a Judmon cull. And like Tricky Creek, she's my first defense, the son of Unbridled Song, who was, ended up being exported after standing at Judmon. But what's interesting about this mare is apparently she's tiny. She's really small. And she's unraised. She's my first defense. But she's just got the most amazing family behind her. I mean, the second dam is Jibe, a really top Danzig filly. But more importantly, this third dam is Slightly Dangerous. I mean, she's the dam of Epsom Derby winner, Commander-in-Chief, Warning, Duchianter, Yashmak, the full to Jibe, grade one winner, won the Flower Bowl here. Just a phenomenal Judmon family. And he gets his mare for $16,000 because she happens to be my first defense. She's unraised. And she's tiny. So apparently after he got this mare, he got her in November. He tried to wheel her back. He was disappointed in her physically. He tried to wheel her back in a phasing Tipton February sale and bought her back for $13,000 or something. Anyway, so he's kept this mare, but she's got this huge pedigree. And here's the funny part about it. He said, you know, when he's mating this mare, he just decided there's no thought process except that, you know, Midnight Blue was a proven horse, and his exact words were, gets runners and the occasional top horse, something like that, end quote. But just went ahead and bred the mare to Midnight Loot. Now, he didn't really pay much attention to what he was doing, he says, but ironically, what you have in this pedigree, Steve, is Midnight Loot is a Fappiano line horse, like, you know, real quiet American. And the dam, as I said, is my first defense. Who's by Unbridled Song, Unbridled Fappiano. So it's an inbreeding to Fappiano. What's interesting is that Midnight Loot has had a couple of stakes winners with Fappiano line mares. And particularly a Fappiano line horse that's really succeeded this way is Candy Ride. Candy Ride has like several grade one winners bred this way, including the stallion you bred to, Leo Frick. He's by Candy Ride out of a Unbridled Song mare. But Candy Ride has also had G1 winner Separation of Powers, who's out of an Empire Maker mare. And not only that, but Candy Ride's son, Twirling Candy, has had exceptional success with Fappiano line mares, too. So there's case of actually inbreeding the Fappiano on the sire line. That means the sire is by a Fappiano line horse, and the dam is by a Fappiano line horse. And what's interesting, his first defense, he's an extremely well-bred horse, obviously. He's out of Honest Lady, and referencing the family you referenced earlier.
Tucson.
Yeah, exactly. But what's interesting is, first defense is turning out to be a tremendous broodmare sire, and one of his horses is beyond brilliant, the Twirling Candy grade one winner, who's out of a first defense mare. First Defense has had quite a few graded stakes winners already in a very short career, seven or eight already. In this particular case, you've got, even though it wasn't planned meticulously and these thoughts weren't processed according to the breeder, it turns out they, if you had been thinking about it, it would have been pretty damn good. And actually, this is a great mare to breed to a Candy Ride or a Twirling Candy down the road. Just following the pattern of what she's done and what other offspring of First Defense, mares by First Defense, have done. And as a matter of fact, this mare's name is Overseen. I just want to see who she's been bred to, just out of curiosity. After, let's see, she had a big time here. Okay, so she's been bred to Frosted. And that's good mating. You know why? Obviously, he must have done some thinking about it, because another First Defense mare, Frosted by Tappet, and another First Defense mare who had success with Tappet was Tacitus. And Tacitus, who's at stud right now, is out of the, you know, obviously another great Judmon family, Close Hatching, who's the champion. And so the foal she's carrying by Frosted is very closely matched with the cross of Tacitus as well. So that's another interesting point. And I doubt if he just went willy-nilly to Frosted at that point. He probably took a look at Tacitus. Excuse me. Saw it was a Judmon type of breeding and kind of copied it in a way. I'm just guessing. I have no idea. But anyway, it just, another thing it shows you, Steve, is that, you know, you can get some of these culls from some major farms like Judmon. This mare was purchased for only $16,000. And he get into this massive family. And it just so happens that she won on the same day that Mandaloon did. Mandaloon is another massive Judmon family, right?
Sure.
And what it shows is that these Judmon families are massive turf families, but you breed the family to Into Mischief, and you get Mandaloon, who's on dirt. You breed this one to Midnight Root. You get Call Me Midnight, who's one on dirt. And by the way, interestingly, the dam of Call Me Midnight, the small mare that was purchased for $16,000, her half sister is still owned by Judmon, and she produced that ill-fated Into Mischief filly, Taraz. Remember her?
Wow.
So, you know, it just shows you. I mean, you yourself might have been at the sale and bought this mare. You know, you would have had this massive family behind you.
That would be from your mouth to God's ears. I do want to mention, you mentioned the story, and I referenced it as well on Monday. Hartwell Farm celebrates Call Me Midnight, and Irishman Robbie Lyons.
Robbie Lyons, that's who it is.
Robbie and Susie.
Yeah.
And they've had a steady stream of success. They had the Havisham that they sold for seven figures. Was the dam of Serengeti Empress.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Obviously, you know, they've got a handful of their own mares, but they also, you know, have a handful that they, you know, that they breed, and they actually race as well. And in fact, it was just funny, even before I saw the article the other day, I had noticed this Wait for Nairobi that Ray Hernandez has got running for them. They've got a partnership with SF. Nairobi.
SF and they actually bred that mare together, tried to sell it with a 50,000 RNA, and so they've kept it to race. And I liked one thing Robbie Lyons said in this article I read. He said he's only going to breed to stallions now where he won't mind racing the offspring, which kind of ties into what I was talking about in my TDN column last week, that it's some of these commercial breeders, it's going to get to a point where they're going to have to start racing some of their own horses, and this is a classic example of it.
As it happens, this family, this is an old family, really, and I always find this interesting. If Roby is the mare, she, and I'm not sure if there's anything else behind that came behind Wait for Nairobi. I could even check, but this mare that produced Wait for Nairobi was by Tabasco Cat out of an Aladar mare.
Wow.
Crazy. Shaquila. It's a very international, actually, a very international pedigree. And Calumet actually bred this mare in 97 is when she was produced. And she's had... she's been a producer, but obviously the Lyons, Robbie Lyons, and I guess it doesn't hurt in this game to have your last name be Lyons between Jane Lyons and Robbie and Susie Lyons. It's a good the Lyons roar
and Roger Lyons.
And Roger Lyons, there you go. You ain't lying, but I'm bump. Oh boy. So watch for Wait for Nairobi on Saturday night. There's these 100 granders every Saturday night at Turfway. With these Turfway's cards have been just terrific, night after night. So anyway, Hartwell Farm, and in fact, you can follow Hartwell Farm on Twitter. And one of the fun things about stories merging like this, you know, if you're wading into the industry and into the game, you make a note of people, who have been successful. And in many cases, it's people that have been successful, kind of under the radar just because they don't have volume. But the fickle finger of breeding fate, seems to sometimes favor certain names over and over again. You look to certain people. I talk about Bo Lane. Anytime I see Bo Lane on the breeder line, I want to look more carefully. And there's people you can emulate, and there's lessons you can learn from people that have come before you and have been doing it consistently over a period of time. It seems like certainly the Lions fit that mold.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, and they've been around for, 25 years.
Yeah, so. 25 years came to the U.S. This very always fun, and we'll look to the Southwest on Saturday, and we'll have a pedigree maybe to dissect. There's certainly some interesting 3-year-olds that are reassembling coming out of that Smarty Jones in particular. So we'll that includes Dallas with that Ben Diesel. Before we talk news of the day topic, Dallas and Mr. Fipke involved on Saturday, Pegasus.
Yeah, and I was gonna go only because I wanted to see Mr. Fipke, but unfortunately he had to switch plans and he's not going to be able to fly out there, so I just canceled my trip over there. maybe if it was 80 degrees, I would have still gone, but it's not.
They say it's, yeah, I guess it's supposed to be pretty chilly, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but he's not going to go. But, you know, this Philly Lady Spikes beer, I really like this Philly quite a bit. And, you know, I think she, you know, I saw her listed at 8-1. Perhaps because she lost her last race for the first time she lost. But she's got to have a new rider, and she had an excuse that day. And a lot of people don't know that she had a shoe that was just flopping down the stretch. And I think that, you know, she's going to have a real good run this time around.
Nice. Well, we're starting to get into the capping for the weekend, for tomorrow and Friday. And Sid, let me get your legal interests and overview. 2 days of hearings that are producing some very. I just had Paul Matisse, and it came up. Some fascinating themes, frankly, of, you know, industry consternation, let's call it. And there's really, you know, a lot of the open wound things on display here, you know, in terms of jurisdictional administration and you know, the variety of... you know, of application of you know, what's called the positive, what is worthy of a suspension in certain jurisdictions. You know, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, Baffert is you know, this giant lightning rod. But it frankly, if you netted the Baffert portion out, if you took the names out of this, it really... The elements of the hearing and the back and forth between the attorneys and the witnesses, both Nyras and Clark Brewster and Craig Robertson for Baffert, if you just listen and netted everything out, it's really all the problems that the game is dealing with and trying to, you know, find a solution. And Heise, you know, come July 1st, seemingly is going to go forward, how it rectifies some of these, you know, these topics remains to be seen. But what's your impression of this? I know that you sent out a comment last night. Yeah.
Well, what happened is there's a guy on Twitter, Brian Malloy, and he hit the nail on the mark. He put out a tweet today saying that, you know, he's been an editor and a reporter for years. He used to be the managing editor of Thoroughbred Record. And he's covered all sorts of these types of cases. And he's never in his life seen so many diverging viewpoints in the reportage. And I was thinking the same thing because I read Matt Haggerty, Daily Racing Forum, T.D. Thornton, and TDN, the guy, the young guy covering it for Horse Racing Nation, let's see, that's three right there. Blood Horse, some guy, the Downey Profile guy writing it for there. And then a fifth one, and I could not believe all these people. The Natalie Voss, the Pollock Report, and I could not believe I was reading about the same case and the same afternoon, because everyone was different. And that's what Brian Malloy said, which I found absolutely what he said true and so puzzling, because each of the publications chose to highlight a certain thing. And I guess Brian Malloy was saying objectivity. It just shows you, Steve, that not only what you said is so true about the industry in general, but the publications that cover it have their own slant. The worst was the Blood Horse one, because it, I mean, but that guy might not be a journalist. I thought the best was Matt Haggerty's coverage.
Yes. He seemed to, as usual.
Know, as usual, yeah. And then the TDN, T.D. Thornton was, you know, good, but, you know, he harped on one aspect of it. But what all of this boils down to in terms of how difficult it's going to be for Haiza is because each of these, you know, this is a case where you have a racetrack that is closely tied to the operation of the state, and you have a state regulatory body, which is the Gaming Commission, that's not even involved in this hearing. So in one aspect, that's the route that Haiza would like to go. They'd like to take out the state actors in it. But the and by the way, NYRA has done this stuff before. If you remember what they did with Jerry Hollendorfer, suddenly out of the blue, Jerry Hollendorfer couldn't race there. And then, without any preamble, he was allowed to run there again. You know, they just kept it quiet and said, yeah, Jerry, you can, you know. It's extreme. When you leave it to a track like this to do what it wants, it's creating more chaos in the whole structure of everything. Now, perhaps what Haiza wants is to be able to surgically remove the state regulatory bodies out of the picture, but you can't do it. And that tweet that I sent to you, which I published on our SireWatch company account, was I pointed out in that case where once again a track CD Churchill Downs has banned Baffert without the regulatory body acting. However, see, Churchill Downs has a set of derby protocols in that case, which go through the KHRC. In fact, any medication that was given to any horse had to be reported to the KHRC, chief veterinarian. And I pointed out in that tweet that if Baffert were giving an ointment, it would have had to have been reported. And so what I did was I filed an open records request with the KHRC to find out, A, was it reported, and what did the veterinarian say about it? Of course, they sent me back a thing saying that, according to state guidelines in the KHRC, they are not allowed to reveal client confidential veterinary reports. So now, imagine Haiza getting involved in something like this, where there's a state rule that will not allow it to be publicly made and explained. So to tie this in with Haiza, Haiza is going to have to jump and dodge and weave around all sorts of state regulatory issues that they cannot supersede. And this is a major part of why this legislation was rushed through without any kind of thought, because, and it gets back to what I had always been writing about, the 10th Amendment, which is that you can't have what's called, the Congress can't commandeer states to do things. So even in the Haiza thing, Haiza cannot get around all of this spaghetti wired state regulations. And that's what we're going to start to see more of as this thing plays out.
Well, it's, I know some people probably are just, you know, just had enough of it, but to me, reading Matt's you know, two pieces from Monday evening and from last night, it really brings into focus some elements. I mean, and if you're taking sides actively, you know, for or against Baffert, there are some points that have been raised by Clark Brewster and Craig Robertson that really are germane and are well worth having out in the in the public discourse here. And at the same time, some of the elements of Naira's concern and their consternation with him and with his presence, you understand as well. So that's what is making this just I don't want to say disheartening. I mean, in some ways, it's not disheartening. In fact, it's important and valuable.
There's certain elements to this that boggle the mind, because when they first suspended Baffert, they did so without a hearing, and Baffert got an injunction, which was later made permanent by the federal judge, who then said that Naira would have to create a hearing board to hear it. So Naira just created this thing with this guy, old Peter Sherwood, an ex-New York State Supreme Court judge, as the adjudicator. Now, what's interesting, just as an aside, is they point out that he's an ex-New York State Supreme Court judge, but a lot of people see that and go, wow, that's huge. Well, the New York State Supreme Court is not the highest court in New York. A lot of people don't know that. It's the Court of Appeals that's the highest court. The New York State Supreme Court is a mid-level court, and it's below the Court of Appeals. So just as an aside, so people don't get this impression that he's, the equivalent of a state Supreme Court version of the Supreme Court judge. No, he's not. But the main thing was, Brewster and Robertson were against this hearing. They tried to. It failed. So they were now forced to come into this thing. They're viewing this as a kangaroo court set up by Naira. And they're setting that up for an appeal, which, one of the takeaways whenever you watch any type of court hearing is don't get elated or deflated by a lower-level hearing, because it goes to a higher level, after that, and it keeps going as high as it can. This was a big mistake Bloodhorse and all these Heise guys did with the Murray Rojas decision. Hmm. They were trumpeting it over and over again as, look what happened, da-da-da-da-da, with this misbranding charge against her, and then it goes to the Supreme Court, gets thrown out, and guess what? They go silent, crickets, nobody talks about it. So, that's one thing, a takeaway. Whatever happens here, it's going to keep going further up. But the issues that you point out are exactly right. Exactly what's wrong in racing in general are being, the warts are coming out here. And even more, because it's kind of unheard of for a jurisdiction to suspend a guy who's never had a positive there and who has yet to be suspended by any regulatory authority. So, and I point, again to what happened with Hollendorfer. They did the same thing, and then they rescinded that, but they kept quiet when they did that and said, oh, yeah, he can race here. I don't like to see an abuse of power by any one entity. And I'd like the truth to come out. I'd like the truth to come out in the Churchill Downs thing. I'd like to see what the real motivation is for Naira to do this. And don't forget, everybody knows what the motivation is, with a wink and a nod. It's association with the jockey club and HISA. Everybody knows the jockey club filed an amicus brief in support of Naira's suspension of Baffert. If that doesn't make it clear enough, you know, what else is going to do that?
Yeah, and that's been that element seems to be being firmly established in by Brewster and Robertson as well on that front. It's frankly a fascinating continues today.
A fascinating and, case study.
Yep. Yeah. And.
And getting circling right back to the reportage, which I referenced, each publication that has, I don't know, some element, some dog in the fight, some way, the Blood Horse obviously is owned by the Jockey Club. They shape it a certain way. The Daily Racing Form, yeah, I got to say, I mean, the guy, Matt Haggerty, did a great job. But, you know, somebody could make the case that the Racing Form is more horseman oriented and whatnot. But I can't say that about what Haggerty did, because he really did do a good job. And then down the line, you get people of, you know, different knowledge, different skill sets, and different levels of understanding legalese, and they're writing for these publications. The Pollock Report one was, you know, pedestrian.
Matt, I can only if people want to get a clear-headed set of reportage, you know, blow by blow, witness by witness, you know, the back and forth. Matt Haggerty's two pieces, I'll put the links up, are just the simplest read, and you can, I mean, Matt's done this for over 20 years and has no, you know, has no interest one in one direction or another, and is just going to give
Matt
you.
Matt is dispassionate.
Yes.
You know, I was at the forum when Neil Cook hired Matt Haggerty.
Neil Cook.
I should say the late Neil Cook.
The late Neil Cook.
I don't know. Yeah, because yep. he, you know, it was reported that
years
he
already.
Died under really mysterious circumstances.
Yes.
In Istanbul or someplace. No, it was, something, you know.
Yeah.
But at any rate, you know, Matt Haggerty, I still remember when he joined, and, you know, he's an exceptional reporter.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I've wanted to get him
on
the last two mornings.
Has he won an Eclipse Award? Because he should.
Matt, I don't think has, actually.
Well, there are two people then, Matt Haggerty and Steve Bickshaw, that should be winning the Cooks Award, bro.
Very good.
I mean, once again, this freaking power structure and how it works, you know, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, there's any number of people that Jay Pribman inexplicably has not been acknowledged
Jay Pribman hasn't won an Eclipse Award?
No, bizarrely.
What? That's crazy.
Yep, it's bizarre, actually. It's very strange.
Are you there?
Yeah.
But listen, I got to tell you a funny anecdote, bro.
Yeah.
You know, when I was at Tampa, I was Chuck Simon and I were talking.
Yeah.
You know how Chuck, myself, and Alan Foreman had been on the thing. I said, you know, Chuck, and he agreed with me. I said, you know, I think Steve was like one comment away from me hitting the disengage button. I mean, Steve did not want to come back to me. He was like,
no.
Chuck said, oh my God, you were so inflammatory.
Well, no, it wasn't. It wasn't a case of that. What I struggled with in that conversation was transitioning in. Basically reformatting whatever had come up with Alan and Chuck. I was sort of struggling to you know, remold it into a question for you.
I'm just joking, but we had
I know what you mean because I kept thinking how do I frame this to Sid, you know, to let him interject. I was trying to come up with ways to shoehorn you back in, and it was tricky.
Bro, I had my bat ready for that ball on the tee right there.
Know what? You should have texted me that you know, let me.
That's okay because
no, because
I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to.
Not at all. No, that was, you know, my, when you have those conversations, you know, that when you have, you know, three people physically involved, it can be, it's tricky.
It was just funny at the track because Chuck was actually telling my wife, Cynthia, said, oh my God, oh, you were inflammatory.
Yeah, I thought you were, you know, it was valuable. I mean,
Chuck's got a great radio presence like you do. He's got a super smooth delivery.
Well, and he's very thoughtful and very measured.
Yeah.
And you know, he can sometimes, he's got kind of a circuitous at times method of covering a topic. I mean, he'll kind of connect several dots to swing back around. But he's as smart and articulate as anybody and experienced. I mean, he's got the benefit of, you know, of being immersed in the game from an early age, and you know, being you know, having a desire to be a horseman and to, you know, to be in the sport. And he was I can tell you, you know, given our relationship, he was ahead of the curve, you know, 20 years ago, 18, 20 years ago. The problems that have, you know, really manifested themselves and are most glaring, Chuck saw them coming 15, 18 years ago and tried to sound some alarms, much like Maury Wolf. I mean, Maury Wolf in 2000 told the industry the computer groups have to be managed and limited and not allowed past any, you know, past a certain critical mass point. And he was ignored. Maury made it very clear that they had the opportunity to basically create all kinds of unanticipated problems. And as has been the mistake that the industry's made repeatedly, in fact, Dick Powell's listening in, and Dick can address this, the industry is
Elmer Fudd. That's what the industry is. and the industry continues to blow that shotgun off in Fudd's own face. Yeah.
Well, the tendency to view alternate revenue and revenue that's presented as, you know, essentially it's seen as, well, this is like finding money in the street. except it's like, you know, it's like those involved movies where it turns out that it's mob money, and now you've got, you know, like in No Country for Old Men, there's a tracker on it, and you know, a killing machine is coming after you, killing everything in its wake. I mean, that's what the, you know, this was the whole issue. You think about the way the OTB monies were viewed. And the mistakes that were made, you know, particularly in New York, where the model in New York became the anti-model for the rest of the country. Well, we want to do OTB, but we know we don't want to do it the way they did in New York. You know, it's one mistake after another like that, because it appears that the money. Oh, this is just free money that's going to flow into our pockets, and then it turns into hidden. Essentially, a hidden takeout, effective takeout against the rank and file horse players.
Exactly. know what I'm saying, man?
Yep. And not to mention the late odds changes are part of this. And I mean, it's just insidious. Anyway, Sid, this was fabulous as always.
As always, bro.
Thanks,
next
Sid.
Week.
You bet. Right. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Hill & Dale, by the way, had an unbelievable weekend as I was digging through some other results. Every single venue, not just Midnight Loot, but Cowan got put up, of course, in the Kenner, and that kind of a gift. He's a Cantheros son. There was Gunfighters Maiden Win for Brad Cox, a Ghost Zapper. That ferociously looks like a nice violence for Asmussen. It was all over the place. Magic Circle, that won the Busanda, Cantheros. There were others, too. There was a Ghost Zapper, too, that I... the Ghost Zapper Philly of the Leblancs. Big, big weekend for Hill & Dale. Dick Powell is standing by, and he joins us now. Dick, I'm sorry I didn't get to you in the first hour.
That's all right. No problem. Sid was on quite a roll there.
Always. Always.
That was excellent. It really was.
I do have other news of the day topics for you, but one of the first stories I talked about on Monday morning doing the weekend recap was Golden 60 going down, and the streak is over.
Yeah, it was a shock, and then Parimutuel was a huge shock. I mean, it was like 1-20, and in the chart, the odds actually just say 1, not even 1.1. And he was far back, and the track announcer immediately picked up on he was racing with his mouth open. So slow pace, far back. Then when he starts making his move and he's gaining ground, the leader has plenty left. Now, the ironic thing is White Cuckoo beat Beauty Generation in the same race 2 years ago.
Hmm.
So White Cuckoo has done this before. And he just was ridden perfectly, opened up distance, because Zach just wrote him masterclass. But I like seeing jocks open up. That distance sometimes just can't be made up. The other horse just can't close in 21. Now, Golden 60 came home in 22.3, I think it was. But it wasn't enough. He just didn't look as good as he did in that December international race. So now it looks like the trip to Japan is off, and he will be back on February 20th. Now, the choice that Francis Liu has is, do they go 2,000 meters in the Hong Kong Gold Cup, or they shorten back to 7 furlongs in the Queen's Silver Jubilee? My guess is they'll go 2,000 meters, just because his cruising speed is just devastating. But it had all the ingredients for an upset, redboarding, but still, he was pounded at the windows and had won 16 straight races. And coming off his best race ever, but that might have been the tip off. Those races are hard to duplicate.
16 straight, and so there is actually not that Golden 60 won't be heralded, after his career as. Very special, but there is something pure about Silent Witness's record standing, unperturbed.
Yes. He was just remarkable, and do it in sprints where so much can go wrong, and one after another. That was an amazing streak, and this Golden 60 hopefully regroups and gets back. They came out of the race apparently okay. What I didn't like was at the wire, he's not gaining ground. Hong Kong gives you a separate replay of after the race. And it's not like he's flying at the finish and ran out of ground. he had made his move, and that was pretty much it. So he was beaten. He had some excuses, but still, that's horse racing. And the late great Harvey Pack used to say, they all get beat.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost all. Almost all.
Well, yes. except for the two fillies I have on my business card, which very few people can guess.
Do you have drawings or do you have photos?
Photos that I took of. I pulled them. The one is Zarkova, which no one gets.
And
the clue is that she's in third, far back is Goldakova. So, you know, she beat Goldakova twice before Goldakova came over here, won 3 Breeders' Cup miles. And then the other one is Black Caviar.
Oh, I no love for Personal Ensign?
Good point. No, not. See, there you go with that binary thinking. It's not all either or. You got to be inclusive, Steve. Yes. It's a business card. It's not a wall mirror.
It's not one of those unfoldy, one of those things, those maps that, you know, becomes a giant, fits into your wallet, but it folds out into a billboard. I love it.
Well, okay, so the other group one we had was the Centenary Sprint. That was also a great one. Grade one. That was won by Stronger. Last week when I was on, and we did the ninth race live, the eighth race had a little traffic, not something super noticeable. Well, Joe Marrero wound up getting a 3-week suspension for his ride on Zone D in race 8 at Happy Valley a week ago. And the stewards just, man, they got into it. And when you watch the race, he finishes fourth in between horses. But they had this big problem that when horses were making moves on the outside, he stayed down on the rail and never moved out. It's a 2-turn race. And, man, so now he's riding this weekend, because this weekend is the first leg of the Hong Kong Triple Crown, the Classic Mile. And he'll ride that. But then he's out for 3 weeks, which is 6 race meetings, which is quite a bit of business. So he got hammered by the stewards, and it's just something that shows you how tough they are with riders, with trainers, with regulations, with everything. So that was an interesting point. Coming up Sunday morning, Saturday night, Pacific time, the Classic Mile. If you go to HKJC, right on the front page, you click, you get all this information, including all the contenders. They draw the race tomorrow. I like the Speedball California Spaniel. He's never gone a mile. He's never gone 6 furlongs. But he's so fast. And I think he has more than enough pedigree, being out of a high chaparral mare, that not that he's going to dominate going a mile, but I think he'll be able to set the pace. And I think his cruising speed is just electric. And I think Tony Cruz has him ready for... Not really an upset. Right now, he's probably like third choice. That website, the HKJC, the front page, gives you all sorts of tipsters analysis and stuff like that, and a preview of all the horses. Packing Victory will probably go off as the favorite. So you might get, 4-1, 5-1 on California Spangle, but he'll definitely be in front. You don't have to worry about finding him in the race. And I don't know where he's going to draw. It doesn't really matter. Long run down the back stretch. He'll make the lead, no problem.
One thing, Dick, I do want to slip in, following up from Golden 60. I don't know if you saw that. I think Alan Carasso from TDN, Alan took a screen capture of the stewards report, what they call the racing incident report. And it and Alan had the germane note, here's what happens when your long odds-on favorite gets beat in Hong Kong. And, it's a detailed report basically of the race, and then, you know, of the veterinary aspect, and you know, they'll bring the jockeys in for their, you know, explanation. I mean, they're the curiosity of anything out of the norm is you know, obviously very pronounced. But there is also, Alan pointed out, Ho fined $2,000 for failing to present himself in the parade ring by the required time. And I want, is that a hit? The Golden 60 didn't get to the paddock on a timely basis. I wonder, was there any note of follow-up to that?
No, I think, well, in Hong Kong, they come to the parade ring already settled, and then the jocks join them. So I'm sure the horse was there on time. I don't know why Vincent was late. I did read the fine. I hadn't seen the racing incidents report. I did go over it for Joe's big suspension, which goes into just incredible detail. But, yeah, that's interesting. And yeah, when something is not, like, for instance, Sunday, if California Spangle is not 1-2 down the backstretch, Matthew Chadwick is going to be in the steward's office, and Tony Cruz also. I mean, they're going to have to explain, why didn't you go to the front? And that they'll, you know, we'll see how the start is and things like that. But you're really, if that's your running style, you better go to them first and tell them, you know, we're going to take back today or something like that. And Tony's already said, we're going to the front. We're going to lead. So, but if it doesn't happen, they got to explain why it doesn't happen. And then that gets reported so the public gets to see firsthand what you know, what the explanation was.
Yeah, I saved that in my bookmarks. I've started, you know, the one thing on Twitter that I don't know why it took me so long to use the bookmarks, but now I have, and now they've even given you the ability to categorize your bookmarks, which is actually very valuable and a nice little tool, especially when there's just, you know, floods of information and you want to keep tabs on things. But Pat, you know, you and Pat have talked about this for a long time, and it the attention to detail Not that Hong Kong has the solution for every single thing that ails, racing anywhere else in the world. But this is certainly an area that, for horse players particularly, would be appreciated. Having jocks called in on a more regular basis when. I won't say like we discussed with Andy yesterday. Failing to recognize bias. Sometimes there's just, jockey's a little slow on the uptake. Let's be honest. Sometimes, but if there's glaring tactical changes, and a horse that is, but like you're saying, is supposed to be out front, and then somebody grabs a hold, grab, like Vince Lombardi said. Everybody's out there. Grab.
Well, the better one from Vince, what the hell was going on here? That was one of his famous sideline exultations.
Well, I think between now and Sunday, we're going to get a lot of Hank Stram stuff, too. Matriculating down the field.
Okay, so Sunday night, we have the Hong Kong Classic, first leg of the Triple Crown. Then we stay at Sha Tin the next Thursday. No Wednesday racing in the Happy Valley. We're at Sha Tin on Thursday for a Chinese New Year program. Then they really throw a curveball back to Happy Valley on Sunday, and then normal schedule Happy Valley 2 weeks from today. So we go Sha Tin, normal. And there's also a Group 3 mile in the eighth race as well. But then next Thursday, Sha Tin in the morning, Chinese New Year. What is it? Year of the Rat?
Is it the Year of the Rat?
I think it is.
I think it is too. I've only been here. I've only been here like 9 hours, but I saw some decorations. I haven't seen a depiction yet. But there's lots of New Year stuff up at Bally's already.
Yep.
So I'll see more. Wynn has always got so does Bellagio, I guess. But Wynn always has fabulous stuff for Chinese New Year.
Well, it's a big market.
Yes, right. Although I'll tell you, I getting here, as I mentioned with the top of the show, it was just so quiet last night getting here, Dick. I mean, I have 40 people out of Albany and then 30 out of Chicago.
That I'm amazed at. I haven't flown that much, but I haven't seen an empty seat.
No.
A while, so. But it used to be so easy nonstop, Albany to Vegas, and then the flight coming home with the tailwind would be like 4 hours and 10 minutes. That was great.
Well, we actually, we got there fast from Chicago. We were an hour early coming out of Chicago last night.
Wow. That's amazing. Going west, that's amazing. Well, but then it's usually the good news, bad news, we're early, but we don't have a gate to look. Yeah.
5 minutes. We have to wait 5 minutes. And
all right.
The pilot said, it was funny, the guy said, I got to shut the engines off, folks, for a minute here. They're going to tow us in. They're worried I can't negotiate around a tricky turn here, which made me laugh. I've never heard a pilot say that. Yeah, so they towed us in with that little, you know, that little club car there thing. It's pretty amazing, actually, that little the thing you see on the tarmac can tow a plane. Dick, before we wrap, any thoughts on the topic of the day? And you following this hearing? You usually are pretty interested in those semantics.
I am following it, and my question is this: the Dinosaurs wins the Derby on May 1st. Soon thereafter, Churchill Downs took their action. He loses the Preakness on May 15th. On May 17th, Naira takes their action. Does Naira take that action if he wins the Preakness?
You said that at the time too, actually. Absolutely,
yeah.
You said that.
And I got to be honest with you, I am shocked that hasn't been part of his defense.
Interesting.
And if the answer is yes, then okay. But I also see here's another one. I see a pattern. Wayne Potts, Marcus Vitali, Bob, there's one or two others. None of them stable at Naira.
Well, Potts does. Potts he had the barn. He was in barn 60 that had the fire.
Yeah, I mean,
he's had horses the last couple of years.
But it just seems like what I had the argument, not an argument, but discussion with two of the three people that voted to ban Dutro. And this is immediately after the hearing. I said to them, so you're telling me nobody else in New York is cheating. You got the only person that cheated, because I don't see you going to these lengths with any other trainers. So now you have a situation where an organization takes an action, fine, but there seems to be some common things to the action. So me as a better. And I heard Paul talking very intelligently about the Lasix on, the Lasix off. Obviously, January 1st changes. A lot of two-year-olds coming out of jurisdictions where they were not allowed to race on it. Not every horse prospers with Lasix, so it's a big handicap and X factor and things like that. But it's just, I don't know, just a lot of questions. I know the sausage making is not pretty, but I question, are we really making sausage this week?
We'll see where it goes today and how much longer it continues. But and also what you know, what the resolution is. One thing, you know, one thing that that for all of the public interest and desire for uniformity that is on display here is also the distinction between private private property in the case of Churchill, as it's being referenced in testimony, versus a state actor, as NYRA is being referred to. And so even, and Dick actually referenced this too, tangentially, even if you get, let's say, a comprehensive, you know, management entity in racing, it doesn't necessarily supersede, you know, the differences of public versus private entities. So that, you know, there's so much on display in this hearing that I think it's going to take a little bit of time for the dust to settle and to, you know, understand the, you know, all the far-reaching implications.
The other issue, once again, I'm amazed that it hasn't been brought up by his side, is who recruited American Pharoah to come to Saratoga for the Travis? I mean, it's like, who recruits him every year to come Belmonte, the undercard, Saratoga, Group 1 stake, Grade 1 stake races, things like that? I mean, if your lawyer is going to say that there were these positives in California in 2019, well, then why don't you pull the plug then? Well, you knew about the equine deaths in his barn back in 2013 and 2014. You didn't pull the plug. Nobody did. You know, and then you're recruiting the guy to come, and he's part of your advertising and marketing of major races. And I don't know, just I think Sid hit the nail on the head. It's really not going to matter. This is not going to be decided this week. There are other steps to take, and the problem is the real court cannot hear a case until you exhaust all administrative remedies. So this is considered an administrative remedy. And that's what killed Dutrow, is that the Gaming Commission did what they did, and then the first court that heard it just wouldn't hear the case, just said, you know, we're going to go with what the administrative remedy was. You know, you don't necessarily get to go to court on every case. You got to get a judge to see that, you know, something was wrong, something needs to be listened to. So I think Sid's analysis of the whole thing, and he's absolutely right, Court of Appeals is the final, you know, stage of litigation in New York State, civil. And, yeah, it's a long process, but it is pretty ugly. It's, like I say, I don't know if we're making sausage.
Dick, I appreciate as always, and we'll look to the weekend at Chatin for some Derby action, and talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Dick Powell, everybody, HKJC Racing on your Twitter, and that was pretty. Yeah, you know, when you have a horse like Golden 60, it's pretty shocking when, you know, you just start to assume that, you know, it's going to win. You're not going to get beat. So see if it's, you know, see if he, you know, is over the top a little bit and regroups, or if he you know, is not, you know, you win 16 straight. you know, it has the potential, you know, to, you know, you got to recoup and come back around. So we'll see. Seth Merrow is coming back around. and he's with us now.
Good morning. How's Vegas?
It's not the same. In fact, when I got off the plane, some officials stopped me and said, why is Seth not coming? They said that everybody's talking about it.
Well, first two things. The last time we were there was actually 2020. A lot of people, you know, 2020 and 2021 were kind of both wiped out. Well, folks remember, the NHC in 2020 was just as the news was starting to spread on this. And I'll never forget that. We arrived out in Vegas to do our OTV TV coverage, and unfortunately we're not there this year, but we had a great time the couple years we were out there. So we arrived, and I was just kind of walking around the hotel a little bit the first day we were there, and I was down by the check-in at the front desk and just kind of nonchalantly looking around and not really paying attention, when all of a sudden I realized I was in the midst of probably 40 Asian tourists all wearing masks. And as I say, the news was just coming out, and I thought, oh, this isn't good. But then the first story, as you mentioned, hey, where I'll never forget it was after the Sunday, because there's the dinner on Sunday, so we stuck around for that. Yeah. And like you, we left on Monday. And so after the dinner gets over, I'm out in the casino playing around a little bit, and it's, I don't know what time, but whatever time, I go over to the elevator to head up to my room to go to bed. The door opens up. You're coming out to get coffee for breakfast. I thought, oh, this is perfect.
Oh, the jokes write themselves, folks.
Perfect timing. The door opens up. There you are. Oh, what time is it?
You're the greatest. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, you know, and you know, I'm glad you mentioned, you reminded me of, you go back to that, that's right, to the 2020.
Yeah.
And I had dinner one night, and with Andy Berg, who everyone knows as Nom de Course of Gumpster Stable. And Andy was the first person that said to me, he said, there's a thing, this thing coming from Asia is going to disrupt everything. He said, it's going to be a real mess with the potential to become an authentic pandemic. And his wife is in a medical profession, so she, you know, this was what, the first weekend in February, and sure enough, 6 weeks later, I mean, there we were. But Andy was the first person to really, you know, make me aware that there was going to be, you know, a major upheaval, disruption, and you know, a devastating.
Well, like I say, when I looked around and saw a bunch of the tourists from Asia, at that point, it was news over there. The news was it was over there, but we weren't yet worried about it. But as I looked around, they were all wearing their masks. I thought,
they're big with that anyway. Back to SARS and bird flu and the various, you know, the various things. They believe in that. They've been way ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah, you're right. If you see, news stories, just a general news story on a busy street in a city somewhere over there, Japan or somewhere in Asia, a lot of the folks are walking around just casually pre-pandemic wearing masks. You're right.
Exactly. Well, meantime, I'll reiterate that I'm sorry you're not going to be here, I'm happy to provide any coverage with you that you might desire for your...
All right. We may check in over the weekend.
For your OTB, capital
particularly
OTB.
Particularly we get some locals in the mix, which is not unusual.
Well, you know, you say that, and that's a fair point. We always get a strong representation because we've got a lot of serious horse players in the Capital District, and obviously downstate. However, getting a little tired of this Chicago, the Chicagoland. They're constantly, you know, they're bullies. Let's face it, and maybe they're contest bullies, and then there's those Canadians. That it seems like it's either from, you know, Chicago people or Canadians that are dominating the NHC.
Yeah, but you don't want to root against anybody. But
says who? Everybody loves a good root against. Who doesn't love a villain?
Well, in professional sports, I mean, I'm totally against the Patriots and the Cowboys, America's team. If they're on the field, I'm against.
See, this is why I
college,
love him.
College basketball, going back to the real
no
Big
Duke.
East. Well, now I'll root against Duke, but I've always rooted against Georgetown as well. So,
no,
but that's those are team sports. It's a little different.
It's a little different, but you know what's funny? I find the Patriots much less offensive with Brady gone. For me, it was Brady that was just grating and offensive. So Belichick is going to get the Boeheim treatment, where suddenly he's going to become warm and cuddly and like, you know, and everybody's going to love him.
I think that's in retirement.
Well, you know, listen, he loves racing. He loves every chance he gets to come to, you know, Saratoga, or, you know, he likes the Derby. He likes the game. So we appreciate that.
Absolutely. And as I will say, as a Jets fan, I kind of hate everybody. I mean, there's nobody that gets the soft treatment because we get beat. And I was thinking the other day, for other Jets fans out there, I, as I'm reading about the playoffs and whatnot, I'm thinking, how can this team in New York, of all places, go for as long as they have without having a decent playoff team? And I racked my brain, and I finally came up with the only other team that maybe is comparable is the Lions. But every other team over the past, you know, whatever, 40 years has had their moment in the sun at least, but not the Jets. And how does that happen in New York City?
It's a fair question, and they are the Jets are the Mets of football. They're you know, the kind of the lovable losers. I'm going to have to send you a graphic that Johnny D sent me that is unbelievable. It's a graphic. I'll just retweet it so everybody can see it. It's remarkable. It's titled "The Last Season That Each NFL Team," you know, dot dot dot, and it's made the playoffs, made the divisional playoff, made the championship game, made the Super Bowl, won the Super Bowl, and so it's sort of like a declining, and it's separated by NFC, AFC, and so it's got kind of a declining line, and it stops, you know, where each team and you know, the Jets. You know, Super Bowl 68, last championship game 2010, actually, which is not horrific. Divisional play, I mean, 2010. I mean, you want embarrassing. The situation with the Lions is just unbelievable. Although they did make the playoffs in 2016, they last made a divisional round in 91 and the championship game in 91. They've never, you know, they're never been in a Super Bowl. You know, Cleveland, Houston, Jacksonville. Yeah, you'll love this. It's very cool. I mean, it's a neat thing to see.
Because as I said, I was kind of racking my brain, and I finally thought, yeah, you know, maybe the Lions are in the ballpark too. And sure enough, yeah, that
they are.
It out.
Yeah, they are. This Bengals. I'm anxious to hear everybody's thoughts the next couple of days, and to get a couple of bets in for Sunday here. But I to have the Bengals and the Niners within reach of a third matchup in the Super Bowl, it would just be bizarre. If the Bengals make it, it feels guaranteed that it's going to be against the Niners.
That would be bizarre. Absolutely.
Right?
And I mean, just the, you know, getting past Green Bay the other day was incredible. And I have to toss my, I say I root against everybody because I'm a Jets fan, but because I'm a Jets fan, I kind of have to have some allegiance somewhere else. And so I go to the other New York team, Buffalo, and man, that was some game the other night.
That was that was kind of tragic, I mean, honestly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, and the Bengals, 88 for the Bengals, and you know, people might not realize that. Well, the 2019, right? I mean, the Niners, but the Niners' last championship was 94.
Oh wow, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, 94. So it's been a shockingly, you know, considering that they're thought of as a, you know, they're an elite franchise. All right, let's talk Seth. What do you, you got to be looking Gulfstream Tampa today, right?
Yeah, those are the two tracks that I'll key on TV tonight. First, to go back to the weekend, Mandaloon I thought looked very good in the comeback. And
he did.
I pulled up, and I talked about it on TV on Sunday, I pulled up the buyers from your Twitter feed. That 106 was very good. Call Me Midnight with the 88 and the big closing effort. I'm not sure, you know, what to make of that exactly. We'll see what that one's like going forward. But the undercard three-year-old races were kind of interesting. Pioneer of Medina for Todd Pletcher in the fourth career start. Yeah, I'm kind of be interested to see what that one does going forward. But all of that said, I was disappointed because one of the performances I thought was okay was Ferociously for Asmussen, who had some win early breeding and lived up to it, but it was only a 64 buyer. So I'll have to see what that one does next time out. But the highlight of the day was Mandaloon and
yeah.
Midnight Bourbon. They both kind of validated what we saw with that three-year-old class last year and moved into the handicap division and became, you know, immediately horses to watch. So I thought it was a good day down at the Fairgrounds.
Well, and Mandaloon, there's I guess I have permission to use this quote. Do I have permission to use this quote? I think I was given permission. Where'd it go? Now I lost it.
Now you have us all on the edge of our seats.
Brad Cox after the Louisiana Steak. I got a real fucking horse this year. So I think that gives you an indication. And you know, this is somebody with, you know, although Nick Sko is, you know, is winding down his career. And speaking of which, he may be a chicken in a pot on Saturday.
I'm just excited about the race. I mean, people have been talking about it since the Breeders' Cup ended. And right after the Breeders' Cup, you know, it was still, hey, they're both going to go. And then eventually that became firmed up. And so I can't remember a race that's had this much anticipation with two horses like this. But more importantly, two horses that have exactly the same need for the lead style. And how's it going to play out on Saturday? I think it's a lot of fun. I think everybody's really looking forward to the matchup.
Agreed, and the card came up good. It should be a great afternoon, and then it's going to give rise. Actually, just looking at the timing, let me take a look here. At I'm curious, what time does for goodness sakes, here it is on Wednesday, and I got too many PPs already. 5:30 for Pegasus. The Southwest actually goes off at 5:22. So the Southwest is before Pegasus. So between the two Pegasus events, the turf and the main track, the Southwest is sandwiched in there.
Nice.
How about that?
Yeah, we're at that time of year where you get these three-year-old prep races almost every weekend that are on good cards. So, it should be another fun weekend. Last weekend was. This weekend obviously is. Oh, and I'm. Are you playing? I'm playing in the charity NHC.
Yes, and I always end up, I just end up, you know, Saturday morning just throwing a bunch of, I it's always a fiasco because I... know, I've got, you know.
You're out there, it's A, it's an early start, and B,
And Friday, coming out of Friday is hard. We'll do the show Friday morning, 6 to 9, and then we come back and do four and a half hours, Friday. It's funny, people, you would think Saturday or Sunday, you know, which are 6 hours of coverage, but it's Friday actually is the toughest day because of that. All right, let's get some plays from you. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, they're off the turf at Tampa, but I put together a little pick four ticket there. So we'll see if we can make something happen. Again, it's a fairly inexpensive ticket. I'm what, 2x3x3x3. Starts out in the sixth race. I have it. It's an optional claimer going six. I have a 3-1-2. Morgan Point comes out of a stakes race, ran six there, but broke the maiden two back. Both numbers thrown in the last two races have a little bit of an edge on this group. So I'll put that one on top. Sammy Camacho rides. But I thought Sue's Shoes was playable as well. Comes down from a debut maiden breaker at the Finger Lakes. That's going to be the question mark for the New York bred, you know, stepping into open company down at Tampa. But the way the horse did it, at Finger Lakes, I'll use that one as well. So I'm going too deep in a scratch-produced field, but I have it 3-6 in there. I think I said I had it. I have it 3-6-1-2 in the. But the two is okay. That's what I did. I scratched the wrong one. The two's out, so I have a 3-6-1. But I'm going to use the 3 and the 6 on the pick four ticket. So. Morgan's Point and Sue's Shoes, 3 and 6 on the pick ticket. In the seventh race, 8-3-5-2 is the way I called it, but I'll use the 8-3 and the 5. And again, they're off the turf. So Fast Fashion, this is a tough race because they're off the turf and there really isn't any dirt for them to speak of. So when I get to races like that, I just stick with the turf horses and hope the best horse is the best horse. That could be Fast Fashion in here. Comes in off a series of decent races since arriving at Tampa. And again, in a relatively weak field, may have the edge. But there is the question mark with the surface switch. Varsity Kick Line in the second spot. Again, it's turf form, but numbers thrown on the turf. And class-wise, also taking a class drop that may mitigate the surface switch. And then 12 Red Roses, same scenario. Seems to have an edge on these. Talent-wise, but the question mark will be the surface. So, again, I'm just kind of hoping the best horse is the best horse, regardless of surface, which I'll use 3 in the 7th, 8, 3, and 5. In the 8th race, we're bottom-level calendar condition claimers going 3/4 of a mile. I called it 6, 5, 7, and 3, and I'll use the top 3, 6, 5, and 7. Code to win, 3-2 on the morning line. I'm not sure that's absolutely realistic. I mean, this horse was beaten favorite last time, and, you know, the numbers, there are numbers down the page that are pretty good, but last time, you know, wasn't anything spectacular. Trainer's pretty good off the claim. So, you know, I have the horse on top, but I think the horse I have right underneath, Gemmo, the number 5, that one's 5-1 versus 3-2 on Code to Win. I think these two are much closer than the morning line indicates. So I'll put that one in the mix as well. And I will also use the number 7, Doodle Hopper. This one's 8-5 on the morning line, but the trainer is 0 for the meet. And so I'm always a little shy. We're fairly deep in the meet, and I'm a little shy to pull the trigger on a trainer like that at a short price, but I had to include it. 6, 5, and 7 in the 8th. And in the 9th, again, it's an off-the-turf race.
Quick,
I'll go 3 deep with my dirt selections. 10, 11, and 9 on the dirt in the 9th.
3-6 with 3-5-8 with 5-6-7 with 9-10-11.
That's it. 27 and 50 cents.
Very nice. Seth, good luck. We'll talk over the weekend. Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow, too, on Twitter. Thanks to Seth. Dick Powell, HKJC Action. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillendale and Paul Matisse. Happy to be in Vegas and looking forward to the next 4, actually 5 days of coverage from Bally's. Thanks, everybody. Good luck. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.